And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast.
You like that? A little harmony.
Everyone just gets so excited. Yeah. Just got to sing it.
Dude, it's great. I bet there's somebody, one person somewhere, who rewinds to the beginning of the podcast just to hear that song before they turn it off.
No way.
No, I doubt it.
The podcast this week is brought to you by our friends at 5-Hour Energy. And I need to grab me my extra strength right here. If you got to get stuff done, grab a 5-Hour Energy shot. They are available in 10 flavors, including extra strength. 5-Hour Energy, it fixes fixes tired fast. I was thinking in my head about tires because I was going to bring up, we were talking about this. I forgot which one of the stars that we were with the other day at the CMAs, CMA Awards, and we were talking about 5-Hour Energy, and they're like, you know, why do you prefer that to coffee? And I said, it's very simple. Coffee is a diuretic. And what happens is if you drink a bunch of coffee to stay awake, you end up having to pee a lot. You have to pull over all the time on a road trip. 5-Hour Energy is great because it's only like under 2 ounces in the little shot, and you're good to go. You get, you know, it's like drinking a cup of coffee without having all the pee side effects. And on a road trip, that makes a big difference when you're talking about time.
Okay.
Say what you want. I'm a fan.
You see that.
Love that.
For different reasons.
Okay, so this is the first time you guys have done the CMA broadcast. It was different this year because the CMA did it all themselves.
Yeah.
They hired a couple companies to help them, but it used to be run by the company we worked for. Used to work for. And so now we're independent, and the CMA broadcast was independent. Was it a different experience being there? If nothing else, because we actually didn't have bosses there.
No, I'll tell you what it was. For me personally, this is Bubba talking. I found it felt very comfortable and similar because the equipment setup, they rented the equipment from the same company that did it all the previous years.
Do you know they rent it? They rent all that stuff from a company in New York City. And I'm thinking, really?
Why don't they rent that from a company in Nashville?
I didn't know they were in New York City. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Unless they have a thing here. You know, like where they can do like two locations.
Have some equipment that they keep here because that company does so much stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway.
It was good, I thought.
It felt comfortable. I mean, it was very nice. I liked the fact that we didn't have those cameras in our face like the whole time. And you didn't have to worry about whatever. Like normally when we do the CMA broadcast, I have to sit down next to the artist, and Big D sits on the other side. So it's like a Big D and Bubba sandwich of the superstar. The problem with that is I, after doing it for 2 days of looking to my left the entire time at a 90-degree angle, my neck hurts. And I end up having like neck issues for like a week.
So how'd you do it? You guys just huddle up?
No. Like, since we weren't worrying about filming, I stood the entire time. Big D sat probably 80% of the time, and the star sat down there. And it was nice and comfortable, and it was, to me, better.
It's but like, you can face them, like, because yeah, it doesn't yeah, matter. No I was one's facing trying to them. Video it.
It was much more like a conversation, like if you were hanging out with somebody and just talking. And so that part of it I liked. I liked the fact that I didn't have to worry about filming and the cameras and this and that. And, you know, it felt better.
It's like speed dating. Because there's so many artists
every
that come
every 5 minutes you now, have somebody
and
new.
And you've got 3 minutes, 4 minutes, whatever.
Big D, you should explain how the whole thing is set up because, you know, for people to really understand.
Okay, so we're in like a little area that has, you know, kind of walls.
Like a conference room.
It's like, but it's really small. There's a bunch of little things and different radio companies that are represented. And so somebody, they get students to come up with a clipboard, and on the back of the clipboard, they hold it, and there is a name of an artist.
So it might say Luke Bryan, or it might say Chase Bryant, or Chase Rice, or...
And they'll walk up to you and go, and they'll go, three minutes? And you go, yeah, we can do that
in other words, can we get this artist on your show in 3 minutes?
So in 3 minutes or so, by now we have, you know, got somebody else. Sometimes it's in the middle of us interviewing someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not sometimes, kind of, probably most of the time.
They'll put their finger up and they'll go three,
two, like, yeah. six, five. You know.
Then they come back and that whole just goes on and on and on for, you know,
shuffle
4 hours.
And I like that. I really do, because it's you know, you can push back. Like we had Luke Bryan on in the prime time part of the show. And they came to us about an hour and a half earlier, and we kind of were like, "Ah, not yet. We got somebody in front of Luke," and we did that so we could strategically have Luke on in the primetime part of the show.
Which, by the way, if you missed any of that stuff, it's all available on our website. You can listen to all of the interviews.
Great interviews, fun interviews.
I was a little surprised that two people didn't show up. I thought Taylor would have been there, and I thought Garth was going to be there.
Well, Garth did show up briefly. I don't know what he did. Garth did show up to the radio remotes.
No. Not the official CMA remotes that you were at.
No,
there's a smaller, another company that does an unofficial remote during CMA week, which I have to say, one of our old friends, Sharla McCoy, who runs that remote, it's called Music Row Live. It's the same thing you did, but in another location for the people who aren't part of the official CMA broadcast.
Oh, so it's the unofficial
CMA. It's the unofficial CMA broadcast.
But that was cool that he went there.
Well, it was her 20th anniversary of doing it, and they've done, you know, every time we've gotten Garth on the phone, it's usually been Sharla who's in charge of it, and she calls and says, "Hey, we'll have Garth call you tomorrow." When he needs to talk to radio stations, he calls Sharla and she calls us. She's been working with him for 20 years, so he knew it was her 20th anniversary and showed up to surprise her.
Okay, that's cool.
That is cool. That is a Garth thing to do.
I saw that on her Facebook page.
Oh,
her,
yes.
She goes there and she jumped up
and
arms.
He caught her.
He picked her up.
Oh, great,
yeah, that was
man.
Cool. I didn't know that. I didn't realize what the story was.
Yeah, they've worked together on a lot of stuff. So
that's what I like about Garth is that he remembers the people that he worked with when he first started, and he still works with those people.
That's it.
A lot of times, what happens, especially like management, They'll get going and they become big, and then all of a sudden the artist will get rid of them.
You know, and sometimes there's all different situations, but Garth's just good about remembering the people that were there very early on, and he's just a cool dude. I'm just
Trisha was there and she with us, and she was great.
Yeah,
man, she was my. Everyone asked me, so who was the favorite one? Trisha. She was my favorite by far. Not even close.
Oh, no. My favorite was Joe Nichols. Joe Nichols Matthew McConaughey.
I was about to say, Joe Nichols doing Matthew McConaughey is priceless.
Funniest thing.
hold on. I'm gonna actually play a little clip of that just because I can. Joe Nichols, we've mentioned it to him before. He sounds so much like Matthew McConaughey, but I guess it's even more so now. We notice it even more so now because of all those Lincoln commercials where he just, you know, talks, Matthew McConaughey. And take a listen to Joe doing his Matthew.
Can you take us through a couple of the lines in that?
Well, he just did.
Yeah.
I was driving a Lincoln before they paid me to. Look at this. No hands. I can turn on my turn signal with no hands and no shirt.
I can blink
and no shirt.
And make my blinkers.
What's he doing with his hands? He's rolling something.
It does look. It
looks
just,
like he's rolling
maybe
a booger.
It's just a habit. Yeah, maybe rolling booger, or maybe he's it's like just, that's his. I'm sorry, I did it on a camera. I'm
his
sorry.
Nervous twitch.
It's nervous twitch. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, is it working out for him? Are they doing well with the?
I tried it and okay. I hurt myself. Look at the band.
Anyway.
I
don't mean
your
finger. So it funny. Sounds. I mean, you've got to, if you get a little bit of time, go to our website, bigdandbubba.com, and you'll be able to see all of, or hear all of those. There's a ton of interviews.
Little Big Town was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Those are always fun. They're just fun. Big congrats to them for winning.
I like Jana Kramer. She comes to sit down next to us, and I like turn my back, okay? Next thing you know, I turn back around, and she's sitting crisscross applesauce on the chair, like up on this big high stool. I'm like, oh, she is going to fall.
She's sitting Indian style on the stool like a preschool kid?
Yes. It was very impressive that she could do that because I don't think I can anymore.
You know, on a stool like that? No, you can't do it.
My knees and my balance, who knows? Thought Thompson Square was fun. You know, that whole, when they were talking about their marriage.
I meant to tell you, I saw them a couple hours later. It might have been the next day. And I was driving, and I was in traffic, and I'm at a red light. And I hear, murr, murr. Murr, murr. I look over, and it's them. in their car, SUV. I roll the window down. I go, hey, what's up? And they go, you're just in your own little world. I said, yeah. He goes, what are you listening to? And I crank it up, and I'm jamming out to George Winston piano solo. I think it was Autumn that I was listening to.
Autumn, yeah, very nice.
And they laughed.
Of course they did. You know why? Because that is funny.
What were you doing, like escaping from everything?
That's what I listen to most of the time when I'm driving.
Really?
If I'm not listening to country, I'll listen to that. Or the boys would get in the car sometimes. They'll listen to flipping stuff. And some of that stuff I like. Some of it I can't stand. Then every once in a while, I'll listen to some 80s stuff. But I'm going to get an 80s fix. But most of the time, if it's, like, especially in the morning, that's when I just come in out and just listen to piano stuff or nothing.
When I, when I'm in the car and I don't, because you're not always going to be listening to country. And when I'm not in my mode where I'm listening to country, because sometimes I can hear, because we work with these songs every day, I can hear the same Dierks Bentley song 20 times in a day sometimes. It just, you know, we just, because we do. So to not get burned out on it, I do break away. And I'll listen to a lot of just bizarre stuff. There's a channel on satellite that's called Underground Garage. And it's like these bizarre songs that nobody's ever heard of ever in history. And like the DJ, talk like this the whole time, but you can't understand them. And it's the weirdest channel. It sounds like they're underwater broadcasting.
That would drive me nuts.
And I like the fact that it's songs I've never heard before, because you know what? When I'm listening to songs 15, 20 times a day, and then I get in the car, and sometimes when I need to escape, I'll go to that because it's completely different than anything you'll ever get anywhere on the planet.
If I'm not listening to country on the radio, I listen to sports talk.
And you call sports talk
stations.
Nobody knows that it's Patrick from the Big D and Bubba Show.
National sports talk stations. I call local ones. Yeah.
Do you talk high school football and act like you know
what's
going on?
Man, I will call. I'll be driving across country on vacation, and I will call local sports talk. It is one of my favorite things to do, and just try to try to be passable. Try to be fit in.
Do you want to give your
no,
name?
Because
you do have a pseudonym that
I hate
you
to tell
use.
You, no one cares. No one. So it doesn't matter if you do or you don't.
You're
giving something up.
My secret identity.
If you hear this name and this voice,
usually I'm Jimmy. Listen, it's Jimmy. I don't know why.
So you do.
I do Jimmy. Look.
God, that just sounds so awful,
Jimmy,
fake.
And you know what? No one has ever called me on it. It started because we had our friend Duncan, who was doing he was doing country with us, and then he did a sports show in the afternoon. On my way home from work, I would call in, and I did this like every other day for a year, and he never knew it was
me.
Does
he know it's you now?
I don't know. I never don't know if I ever told him that I used to call him every day as Jimmy.
Call him at his house, because he's retired now. You can call him at his house.
He's got a radio job.
Yeah, actually, he's back in radio. Yeah,
oh, good for him.
Yeah, public radio or something.
You can call him now and be like, hey, it's me. I followed you.
Hey, look, Jimmy. I know you moved to the other side of the country. Listen, listen, I'm going to talk to you about football.
Listen, Spurrier's just got to realize, you see, that...
the best.
The only radio show I ever called into in my entire life was Art Bell. It was Halloween night.
You get on?
Yeah, it was Halloween night, and I got on. They were telling ghost stories. I got to tell my ghost story, the one that I shared on the podcast couple episodes ago, and it was cool. I was so nervous, dude. I've never been so nervous to talk on the radio as I was that day on hold waiting for Art Bell to pick up the phone and start talking to me. Because I, you know, late at night, he always has the weird shows, you know, like all the, like the Ancient Aliens type stuff. He was doing it way back before Discovery Channel and all that was touching that. And I was so excited, man. I taped it and everything. I have it somewhere.
I remember the first time I called a radio show after I had started working in radio. I was listening I think it was Fox Sports. This is like 15 years ago. One of the Major League Baseball pitchers had gotten beat up by his girlfriend.
Oh, I remember that.
And they were
Tawny Kitaen?
It was one of those. It's happened sadly several times. But they went on for 20 minutes just mercilessly ripping this guy for getting beat up by a woman. And I just couldn't take it anymore. So finally I called in. And I said, you guys realize the alternative is he stops her from beating him up by beating her up? Like, what does he do? You can't throw a punch back even in self-defense because that's it. You hit a woman. You're done. I'd rather get beat up by a woman than be the guy who hit a girl one time, especially if you're famous. You're never going to live that. That's it. You know? And they both kind of went, oh, you got a point. There's not really anything you can do in that situation but get away.
And then as soon as you hang up, they go back to make
berating
the guy?
No, when I hung up, I went, listen, and that was it. The whole rest of the thing, they're like, well, you know, we hadn't thought about it. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I changed the whole tone of their conversation. And that's when I got the bug. And I started, never have I had such an effect on any radio show ever again, including this one that I work on.
That's so funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that always bugged me so much. That whole thing. I can't believe, man, if somebody got beat up by a girl.
Oh,
It's an easy joke, but what do you do if you're that guy? You can't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all been in that situation where, you know, some, you know, girls doing that hand slap windmill thing.
Yeah.
And you just kind of, you know, whatever.
A real man will take it and just, or get away. You, the last thing you should ever do is hit a woman, even if she's hitting you
run
first.
Run away. A real man, a smart man, will get in the car and drive away and just wait for her to call mad.
Now, unless,
going,
listen, man, some chicks are strong. They will mess you up.
Yeah, you can't just sit there and take it because you don't want to be, oh, look, here's the thing. A real man, you say a real man will sit there and take the slap. You know what? Big D's right. A real man might get knocked out. And guy wants to be that guy.
You got to be smart, man.
You got to just leave.
But you can't come back. You can't come the next day and go, well, I mean, I know I hit her, but I was in self-defense. She hit me six times first.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. You don't hit a woman. You don't do it.
Yep.
So maybe that's sexist. I don't know. I can't tell these days. If Brad Paisley's joke was racist, then maybe what I just said was sexist. And don't ever hit a woman. That's sexism.
That was crazy, too, the whole Brad Paisley thing and Twitter eating him up. This is the most racist thing ever said on television. No.
And
no,
I know
it
that
wasn't.
Really had to really get to him because he's so not that.
No.
You know, he goes out of his way to unite races and for him to say something that's taken away that he did not mean it, I had to tear him up.
I don't think there's any country star that has been more involved with President Obama than Brad Paisley.
That's true.
Brad
outwardly,
plays
yeah.
the White House all the time.
Yeah.
He made jokes about it on the CMAs about how he talked to the president and the president told him something. I mean, he was making a joke about it, but probably... The reason it's believable is
But you know what? What's his defense? I have a black president. You can't do that. You can't go, I have a black friend. You can't say that. Because if you do, then people go, you're a racist.
I'm sorry. No, the joke wasn't racist. It wasn't racist.
What he said, Patrick, kind of give the rundown on it.
He said, if you're looking for the new TV show that's usually on at this time called Blackish, which is a real show.
And he said he loves it.
Yeah, and he said all kind of nice stuff about it, and he said, this ain't it. And then he kind of looked around and pointed at the crowd and said, but in the meantime, enjoy Whitish. And it was funny. Everybody laughed.
If you look at the crowd, the only non-Caucasian you saw in there was one of the producers and Darius Rucker. That's why the joke was funny. And obviously,
it's a joke on us because we're all white and it was all white people there.
Hey, speaking of kind of going back to president and politics and stuff, how about the whole election? What does that mean? What does that mean? Because I'm kind of dumb.
You ready for this? What is it? Since 19, I forget what it was. Since like 1900, there's only been one time where. No, twice, where a Republican president had a Republican House and Senate, and it was only for 4 years, and total. Other than that, every single time that a Democrat has been in office, they have pretty much controlled the House and Senate.
I'm not sure what you just said.
It was something I was reading, and I wish I could find it now, because what they were saying is that if a Republican president is elected— In 2016, it'll be the only the third time this century that there would be a Republican president.
But we
president.
Don't know that there'll be a Republican House, Congress because Congress, especially the House,
is still,
will be completely, it could be completely different.
I don't know. Well, they're
now.
Saying that the odds are, is what they were talking about. Either way, it's a big one because now you're going to see, it's more posturing. You know, everybody says Obama and the Democratic Party lost on this one, but did they? Because now they're going to be, separating themselves from Obama and back and forth. And you've got the lame duck situation coming up where...
I don't know. Can I say something unpopular?
Go ahead.
How... I'm just going to say it. How did Edwin Edwards get into a runoff in Louisiana? How? How did that happen? How did he run? How did he get to the point where Edwin Edwards ran for Congress and that was...
Celebrity.
Everybody
knew. Everybody
felon,
in the state of Louisiana knew his name, and
if you're a convicted felon in most states, you can't vote, but you can run for national office. How is that a thing?
Because people like him. That's what it comes down to. It doesn't matter. People, it's Edwin.
If you're charming, you got
that's
a shot.
That's it, man. That's exactly what it is. It's just like people. Listen, I know a lot of people who don't like Obama. All right, and I got two friends of mine who had a chance and they met him. And they had a little bit of FaceTime, not much, but a little bit. And I said, you're going to go meet your bud this weekend, huh? And he goes, yeah. He had to do. It was kind of a thing. But he was kind of looking forward to it. It's still the president.
It's the president.
Yeah, exactly.
You respect the president in office. He comes back and he goes, man.
That was cool.
I may not agree with everything he says, but you know what? I like him.
Yeah.
See, that's the power. That's the power of being likable.
I wish both sides would look at it that way.
Look at George Bush. Johnny Joey that was in here not too long ago talking about the time he spent with George W. Bush. He's like, man, he's just one of the most down-to-earth, cool people you will ever meet.
He said it about President Bush and President Obama. He said, they're both, look, they have different views, but for God's sake, people, stop with all the stuff I was reading on Tuesday night and Wednesday morning on Facebook, people reacting to the election. You got just calm down. We don't all have to spout terrible things at each other. This is why we hate each other. Why? Because we don't agree on how we should run healthcare. That doesn't mean we can't get along.
Yeah.
I just think you shouldn't. I don't agree with your tax plan. That doesn't mean you're a terrible person.
Well, yeah, it does.
Oh my God, Kathy's parents. Send her things. It's always not true. Like they sent the one thing.
They send the email stuff.
Oh my God! They sent a link to a video of Obama speaking, and it's where he's saying, "He goes, can you believe this? Here he is saying that he doesn't even like America." And I'm watching it, and it's so awfully overdubbed. It's not even his voice. And I was like, because they don't know. For some reason, I'm not saying that they're not hip or whatever, but they didn't catch it.
They didn't, the magic of the internet.
I don't even know they even watched it. All he had to do was see that the headline, and he's just going to forward it to everybody, and it's not even true.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm speaking of all this, and people are going, oh, I know what they are. He's a Republican. He's a Democrat. I personally am neither. I'm independent as they come, and I'm right smack dab in the middle. There's some things I agree with both parties on, and that's why I think, honestly, political parties should all be done away with. I hate political parties because we end up getting caught into – it's that whole thing of the two wolves and a sheep having a vote on what's for dinner. It's the oldest little line, but it's true. Who's going to win? The wolves. So it's kind of one of those weird, dumb things where we don't vote anymore on what we believe is the right thing. We vote for party lines. And I think that's just dumb.
Well, no matter what side you're on, 10% of Americans believe Congress is headed in the right direction, but 90% of incumbents were reelected.
Which, how does that happen?
That's both parties. That's when you put the whole thing together.
How does that happen?
90% of incumbents kept their seat that were running, kept their seats.
And what you were saying basically is that 90% of America thinks Congress are a bunch of idiots and are doing a terrible job, yet that same 90% goes and votes them back in.
Look, I really hate what these guys are doing, but my guy is not the problem, so I'm going to go vote for the guy I've been voting for. Oh,
Yeah. Here's the thing. You should run on your character, on your ideas, on your voting record, that kind of stuff. Voting, you know, having to run because of what party you're affiliated with, I think is just, it's outdated.
And watch House of Cards on Netflix. It'll get you really caught up on the political life in Washington.
How did we turn this to politics?
I don't know.
I did.
Let's talk about songwriting. We had a really cool thing we started. We're going to start doing often. Where we have songwriters come in.
A couple times a month, right?
Yeah. Every 2 weeks, we're going to have a new songwriter come in and do a songwriter spotlight and tell us the stories behind one or two of their biggest songs and play them for us. And
did you see my bud, Rob Hatch, ended up getting Songwriter of the Year?
Songwriter of the Year. I saw that.
Did he?
Yes.
So we've got to have him in now.
Oh, absolutely. He was on the list. Next up, I was kind of keeping this a secret.
Well,
I won't tell you that.
Yeah,
but
don't
anyway.
Tell us, because we got a songwriter we're about to feature here at the end of the podcast, somebody that we had on the show that was, it was cool. I mean, he's got such a crazy story. It isn't, the reason why we picked him is Patrick was like, the story of having this guy in is nuts. He's written two number one songs. And you would think, oh, that's great. Well, he's on fire. He's writing hits now. He's good to go. No, they were 22 years
apart. It's crazy.
He kept doing it, even like with a big dry spell like that. So anyway, we're going to include that interview on the end, and he's on the end of the podcast, and it's cool because you get to hear him play his versions of his hits that you never have heard before his way. Do we want to go ahead and just dive into that right now?
I think we should. It's really, I thought it was a great interview.
All right. Again, we do want to thank 5-Hour Energy. I've got my extra strength right here. Got to get stuff done. I just pop this open, grab a 5-Hour Energy shot, available in 10 flavors, including extra strength, which is what I opened. 5-Hour Energy fixes tired fast. And now our songwriter, what do we call it again?
Spotlight.
Songwriter Spotlight. We're pros.
Hey, we are starting a new segment on the show called Songwriter Spotlight, and we are big fans of the songwriter. Country music is music that usually tells a story, and the talented people behind the song to us is so key and so important, and to be honest with you, a lot of times neglected and overlooked. And so we want to take time not a lot, maybe, what, a few times a month, a couple times a month, to do these songwriter spotlights. Today, our very first one, Mark Beeson, joins us. Hey, Mark.
Guys.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
So we're just talking off the air about being kind of anonymous and mm-hmm. under the radar, and I guess it's good and bad, huh?
No, it's all good.
Okay.
The only time it doesn't work is, you know, I used to be an artist back in the 90s, and I was really anonymous then too. That's kind of like not what you want when you're an artist. But as a songwriter, it's a wonderful thing.
You've got a really interesting story about having two number one songs, but just a distance in between those.
Yeah, and I wrote a song early on with my friend Sonny Lemaire from the band Exile, and it was a song called When She Cries, and Restless Heart recorded it, and they had a big hit with it. It went number one, and it took me 21 years and about 30 something singles to get my next number one, which was We Are Tonight with Billy Currington.
Wow.
So I'm either like really stubborn and dedicated or in complete denial of reality.
Do you think that you know, that's a good thing for having all that time in between, or do you think it's a kind of a crazy thing? Because I kind of think it's cool.
Well, you know, it's cool if you don't have any bills to pay. I mean, it just, I guess honestly, if I'd have known, you know, 21 years ago it was going to take me that long to get another one, that might have been pretty discouraging. Because, I mean, when you have it, when something good happens, you know, this craft, this thing that we do is really built on hope. You know, that's pretty much all songwriters
have. Song,
you hope
yeah,
that
you know,
something's going to do. Because once it gets out of the room, after you write it, then it's like letting a kid go. It's in a whole bunch of other people's hands.
So basically what you're saying is songwriting is like golf. Because you'll have one good shot, and that makes you come back.
Yes.
And that, then that is a great analogy.
It's like, you know, you hope and pray that you'll have another one just like it or even better one day.
Yeah. Well, I hit a – it's apparently I hit a really good shot on the first hole, and it took me 18 holes to hit the next one.
Hey, our guest is Mark Beeson is joining us back in what year was it you had your first number one? 19
– Well, 92 it came out, and it went number one in 93.
And then fast forward to now, that was your first number one.
Yeah.
Then 21 years later, 22 yeah. years later, you get a number one again with Billy Currington, We Are Tonight. And I just think it's such a testament of don't give up. If this is what you like to do, you do it. You don't do stuff. People always, not always, a lot of people ask us, man, so how do you guys get where you're at? And I go, you know what? You do it because you love it. You don't do it because you want to make money. You yeah. want it because you, if you do it because you love it, the money will come.
That's absolutely right.
Usually.
It's absolutely right.
Sometimes.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, what I do and what my peers do and what you guys do is not for the faint of heart or those who crave security. And because it's built on faith and hope, and hopefully you pay attention. I feel like I learn something every day when I write, and I don't feel like my best song has been written yet. I feel like I'm learning all the time, and I have an opportunity to get better. I'm sure you guys feel the same way. You're constantly trying to improve your show,
yeah.
doing what you do. And so that's what keeps me going. And, you know, we were talking a minute ago about Alan Shamblin, one of my good buddies and a great songwriter, and he always reminds me that you just take care of the one step in front of you as a songwriter, and you just do the best you can that day in that room, because we don't control anything that happens after it gets out of the room. And so that's
just like what we do.
Well,
it really is. I mean, we do what we do in here, and then it's up to the person on the other end listening through those speakers as to whether or not they remember us and tell their friends and all that kind of stuff.
Right. And so many things can happen to derail something, derail it in the long line of things that have to happen to a song before it becomes a big hit. And so many stars have to line up that are out of your control. And I don't know. I'm grateful that I get to do this for a living. I had other singles, and some of them were like top 10 type things along the way. So it wasn't, you know, just like a, you know, number one and then a desert for 21 years. But, you know, you still always hope, wow, this is the one. You know?
Yeah.
You you think it every time.
Yeah. Because every one of your children is beautiful.
Yes, absolutely. So, you're not exactly.
Well, let's
unbiased.
The proud daddy show off a little bit. Let's kind of give people a little sample of your number ones. Mark Beeson.
Okay, this is, I wrote this with Sonny Lemaire a long, long time ago. The road I have traveled on is paved with good intentions. It's littered with broken dreams that never quite came true. And all of my hopes were dying, and her love kept me trying. She does her best to hide the pain that she went through. When she cries and at night, and she doesn't think that I can hear her, she tries to hide all the fear she feels inside. So I pray this time I can be the man that she deserves. 'Cause I die a little each time when she cries. Yeah.
God, what a great tune, man. Love that.
Well, you know, I have to say what that song has in common and Billy's record is the artist and the producer made great records. it's also a part of the creative process that a lot of people don't necessarily think about. And Restless Heart and Josh Leo produced that record, and they just nailed that record. It's a great sounding record.
Yeah, but you know what? Even just hearing you play it like that acoustic, I mean, you realize, all that aside, granted, I understand what you're saying, what they do in the production booth and all that kind of stuff, that is great. But if it all starts with a good song, and you can obviously tell just acoustic right there, it's a good song.
Can we hear a little bit of We Are Tonight?
Sure, sure. You know, it's morning time, so
I'm gonna, tell me about it.
I'm gonna try not to crap out on the vocal here too much if I can help it. Let's see. All right, let's see. Summer coming through, roll down the window, tearing down an almost two-lane back road. Freedom and fireflies in the air. Night's still young, never wanna get old, living for today, like there's no tomorrow. Follow the grooves, the tires in the grass, laying on the gas like we're never coming back. It's a Friday night, it's a small town girl, everything is right, and we rule the world. Two twirls in the truck, back feet, bunch of rock stars on
What's interesting about that is it really didn't change a whole lot from what his version is. They're very, you know, a lot of times it changes. It didn't really change much.
Right. Well, the arrangement is real similar. And I have to mention my co-writers, Josh Osborne and Sam Hunt.
And, oh, Sam Hunt is on that as well.
Yeah. And actually, Josh and I wrote that for Sam. That was the original idea. And Sam went in and recorded it as part of a package to try and this is, you know, a couple of years ago. To try and get a record deal. But before it got to that point, I mean, you've heard Sam's music, what he's doing now, and that guy just really knows what he wants to do, right, what he wants to sound like, you know. And he loves that song, but he called me one Friday night, and after about 6 months after they had cut it, and he said, you know, I think I might let this one go because I think I'm doing something different. And I remember thinking, wow. And that night,
you're thinking, this sucks.
Well, I mean, honestly, I really believed in that song, and I believed in the recording they did. And I said,
are you sure, dude?
I said, okay. Well, Sam has a way. I mean, you could just tell. You could tell when somebody, you know,
yeah,
like has conviction,
he bought in and said, okay, I'm going a different direction.
Yeah, and he was really, and he's very humble about it, and he loves the song and everything. And he said, you know, if you want to pitch it, go ahead. And that night, it was a Friday night, I sent it to Dan Huff, and I attached something. And I said, okay, I'm sending this to you, and you got to get back to me before Monday, because Monday everybody at Warner Chapel is going to find out that you can pitch it, and then it's going to be all over town. And Dan hit me back on Sunday, and he said, don't pitch it. I want this one. So, and then
Billy Currington ended up with it, and bam, number one.
Yeah.
Bills paid.
Yes. I got a couple more years on
nice.
This ride.
Woo! You know?
Man, it's such a pleasure to – get to hear these songs and
the stories behind them. Yeah. I think that's fascinating too. It's just, you know, how it all comes about is just as interesting as the song itself sometimes.
All the behind the scenes stuff. You can follow Mark on Twitter. Or you have Twitter and all
no,
that?
No, man.
What
I'm
do you do? What?
I'm old school.
You can send him a letter.
You could do it French right. Airmail, par avion.
You could pass me a note at Starbucks. No. I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. I'm kind of.
If you want to, you know, look him up, it's Mark with a C, M-A-R-C, Beeson.
B-E-E-S-O-N. Yes. Mark, thank you for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks, you guys. I appreciate it.
This was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day. It was the podcast.